Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Friday, the 6th of January, the first Friday of January, and we're very, very pleased to have you with us. Thank you very much for being with us. It's always nice when you do a radio show to have people listen. it's one of the things we try to accomplish. Let me introduce our panel to you, and then we'll get on to the news of the day. And there are some good things to talk about, as there always are. And we'll get to those items. First and foremost, WAMC's Alan Shartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, but I'm anything but foremost. And I wanted to congratulate you, Joe, on the extraordinary interview you did with Malcolm Nance
yesterday.
Wow,
awesome. That's true.
Everybody's talking about it. Joe, how did people access that?
It's online. It's on our website at wamc.org/roundtable. The funny thing about that interview was that he was supposed to come in and do the panel.
Right.
And then he said, I've got a thing with MSNBC. I can't do that. And then he showed up. He was supposed to, and then I said, okay, well, can you do 11:30? And he said, yes. And then he arrived at like 10 after 10.
Mm-hmm.
So right. Then I said, well, do you want to go on at 10:30? And we did. And then we never really got off until about quarter of 12 because he just kept going. And it was, it's really amazing stuff. I'll tell you, though, not for the faint of heart, it will scare the zippers off you.
Yep.
it is really frightening stuff. Hopefully he won't object to me. He said it on the air, so I assume he won't object to me. But to hear someone of his caliber taking this so deadly serious and say, well, this is what happens when you have a moron. Right. You know, and I was like, I was struck by that. I mean, wow. It was like, that's scary to me. But.
Can I say something? He said that
yes.
We were talking in the room just before he came on, and he said, you know, this started out kind of silly, and then it got serious, and now it's suspicious, and the next thing is seditious.
Yes.
So it sounded practiced, but it was like that made my I had chills up and down my spine from that.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Alan. It's at wamc.org/roundtable, and you can find out that it's. It's quite something. Hopefully we can get him back and we can get him on the panel. And he said he wanted to do an All Terrorism Tuesday at some point. So
And now I know who we're talking about. I just Googled him. I see him all the time on MSNBC.
Yeah.
And I love him.
Yeah,
I can't wait to listen.
Very, very good.
He's so smart. He's incredible.
You know how we got him? He called us very early. He lives in Hudson, New York. And he said, like to be on your show. And so we said, great. And that's how we got him. And then, of course, he got real famous, real busy with MSNBC and everybody else, but much in demand. But we just love him.
Yeah, he's a great guy. And he said one of his goals for the new year is to spend more time up here. So hopefully we can take advantage of that. So, good morning, Alan. Thank you for that. Rosemary Armeo is here. She is the director of the journalism program at the University at Albany. Good morning, Rosemary. Very
Good morning.
Nice to have you here. And our breath of fresh air, Barbara Smith, is with us. She is a author, activist, and with us each and every Friday, and we couldn't be more delighted. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for being with us. All right, so let's go to what is happening. Or happening in the news. We mentioned, we were talking about this yesterday, about, of course, on the panel, about the hearing that was taking place. There are, for those of you who heard the coverage on NPR, there's just some great quotes from both John McCain and Lindsey Graham, but especially John McCain, who certainly seemed to be enjoying this this task of showing up the president-elect. But a united front of top intelligence in officials and senators from both parties on Thursday forcefully reaffirmed the conclusion that the Russian government used hacking and leaks to try to influence the presidential election, directly rebuffing President-elect Donald Trump's repeated questioning of Russia's role. They suggested that the doubts Mr. Trump has expressed on Twitter about the agency's competence and impartiality were undermining their morale. James Clapper Jr., the director of National Intelligence, said, quote, "There's a difference between skepticism and disparagement." He said this at a hearing of the Senate Armed Services Committee on the Russian hacks. He added that, quote, "Our assessment now is even more resolute that the Russians carried out the attack on the election." Alan.
Well, think of what this means, Joe and panel. This means that the basis of American democracy, of course, is elections, free, fair, open elections. And now it turns out, there are many of us who are not happy about the way the thing turned out. This is not that. If it turns out that a foreign power influenced the election, it seems to me that is antithetical to everything that we know about whatever democracy we have here. It's disgusting. Now, remember, this is a guy who said our elections were rigged. And now it turns out that they were rigged by him. And if not by him, by his pals, who he is sticking up for. I don't know that there's any proof that he and Putin came to an agreement on this, but it's looking stranger and stranger as he talks about how he loves Putin and how they should go ahead and he has no problem with Putin getting involved in hacking us. That's very strange.
Kellyanne Conway was on CNN as I was driving into work this morning, and I listened to the interview that she did with Chris Cuomo. It was sort of classic in the sense that a very contentious and going back and forth and so forth. But to what you were just saying, Alan, I mean, that was the point that she was making, that any time where Chris Cuomo pressed her on the fact that this was that they were just dismissing the intelligence, she said, no, what you're doing is you are undermining the results of the election. And he said, no, we're accepting the election results, but what we don't know is, even going forward, let's say we all accept the election results, your guy's going in on January 20th, but at what point do we start to become concerned about the interference of the Russians in our electoral election process?
And we're at that point.
Well, right. And she isn't, though.
Yeah.
You know, that and that was
and
his.
Probably never will be.
And that was
right.
His issue.
She's paid not to be.
Right. So that was to underscore what Alan was saying about that anytime you bring that up, it's that the election results are being questioned, and I don't think that's the case here. Even in the hearing yesterday,
Alan also pointed this out. I'll underscore him too, that we don't know yet exactly how this interference came about. If there was some corroboration with Trump himself or with his intermediaries, we don't know yet about that. We also don't know, because he has not released his tax reforms or done anything about his tax returns, right, or done anything about his businesses, what connections he has with the Russians. I believe there's reason to suspect that he's deeply implicated because of his, he has a lot to gain personally from the Russians working with them. So we don't know any of this yet. It's been 5 weeks now since he promised to tell us how he was going to resolve the conflicts of interest. We have yet to hear anything about resolution, and we don't know the extent of the conflict yet.
You know, we're getting a whole bunch of letters because we were talking earlier about this interview that we did yesterday on this very topic,
right.
But
right.
We never mentioned the man's name, so I will do that now so people can find it. It's the man's name is Malcolm Nance. He is a counterterrorism intelligence expert. He works with now with MSNBC and NBC, and also as the author of several books. But the man's name is Malcolm Nance, so you can find that. But to your point, Rosemary, that was one of the things that he was saying. And Alan, to your point as well, he said, look, we're just at the tip of the iceberg here. There's so much we don't know about what happened.
Mm-hmm. And this is going to be very interesting, because, first of all, he's going to replace and probably, quote, reform our intelligence operation. And that's interesting to me, in that everybody who is there now will be kicked out. Now, at the very top, so does anybody want to bet that some of those people won't find a way to leak some of what they really know about this?
That's what Joe Scarborough was saying on Morning Joe this morning. He said, don't pick a fight with the CIA, because they will leak and leak and leak. What he said.
Barbara, I don't watch that program, so I'm glad you're telling me.
I know you don't watch it, but that's not why
I
said
fine.
It.
No, that's fine.
But you made that point yesterday, Alan, because it was something that struck me when you said it yesterday, which was that you have, which is something I think even Rosemary, that I hadn't thought of. That yes, once you leave and then you're a little ticked off, you're going to tell the story, right?
Those are the people that investigative reporters look for, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that the two incumbents who are speaking with Trump today came pretty close yesterday to saying negative things about the incoming president. That's extraordinary. You don't hear that kind of thing. And we have this story on our list, but Woolsey is leaving. These are not unconnected events.
No. No, and not only that, but I think another connection, Rosemary, correct me if I'm wrong, I know you will, is the appointment of Senator Coates as the Dan Coates as the intelligence czar. Now, look, there are some bad people who have been appointed to the cabinet, really bad. Coates is not one of them. He's conservative, all right, and he's probably a protege of Pence. Because of the Indiana connection.
Yeah, they're big pals.
But I think they really needed somebody, considering that this could take them all down, who had an air of respectability compared to these other guys who have never done any of it.
Well, he has, Coates has, he definitely is qualified. I mean, he's been a senator, he's been a congressman, he's been a lobbyist, he's done everything in Washington. So that's not the problem. He has no experience at all in intelligence. He also is no friend of Russia, which I think is part of the balance they were looking for.
Well, when you say balance that we're looking for, what do you mean?
You know, that in addition to, you know, the Secretary of State is buddies with Russia, certainly our president-elect is. Coates is not. Coates is, spoke out, you know, heavily against the invasion of Crimea and has been banned from traveling into Russia. So
no,
he
Rosemary, I just took some notice of what you just said about what they were looking for. Almost as if they were looking for something that really was balanced. I think what happened is they got their pants scared off by what's coming down on them now about the Russian thing. And they thought that, and I don't think this was a long time coming. I think this was a considered decision because they know they're in real trouble.
I don't know. You may be right. Coates was actually interviewed weeks ago, at the beginning of the transition process. And many people thought that as part of his whatever it is, consolidation, weakening of intelligence gathering, that he was going to just do away with the whole position, which is new since 9/11. And so he might have done that. We certainly have functioned before without a director of intelligence. But then they appointed him, and I think that change has to do with he doesn't want to be seen as weak on intelligence.
And you know what? I'm sorry, I'll be right off. Yes, that's right. But the intelligence director, which is supposed to be sort of a czar, has turned out to be anything but.
Right.
The CIA guys and everybody else are coming in and saying, no, we're not going to let you run our agents or anything like that. So they've been sitting there. We used to call that the interschlepper with the responsibility of standing by the door with his coat in his hand.
You know, I'm actually not completely opposed to Coates. I think he may end up doing the job the way it was intended when the office was set up. Someone who doesn't have a hand or an interest in any one of the 17 agencies we have collecting intelligence, who can sit there and sift through it all as an outsider and say, you know what, this is what makes the most sense to me.
Barbara.
Well, Trump says that he's a big fan of intelligence.
Yeah, right.
When you're talking about trying to calibrate the response to their complete undermining of the intelligence agencies by appointing Coates, his language, everything that he does.
Trump or Coates?
I'm talking about Trump. Okay. I mean, is somebody presidential, is it presidential to refer to how you feel about or how you think about an agency of government as saying, I'm a fan? He's an idiot. He is so incredibly idiotic and incompetent. And one of the things that I was wondering reading the articles that we have for today is I'm wondering what his fan base, you know, his supporters think about these developments, or do they even register with them as being a great significance and possible threat? That's what I'm wondering about, because I think this whole period since November the 8th has been completely chaotic and off the charts. I mean, if somebody had been in a coma and woke up and you told them about just the period between November 8th and today, they would say, no, that's just not possible. How could that happen?
Was it the Times that did an article? Somebody did an article on that. I mean, if you were asleep for the last year of it was an end of year thing. If you were asleep in the year 2016 of just what you missed.
Bob Dylan won the Nobel Prize, and guess who's president?
Right.
What?
And guess who's attacking the intelligence agencies and tweeting in the middle of the night about Arnold Schwarzenegger? You know, it's just, spare me. That's not one of our stories, but.
Yep.
Alan, when you think about it, obviously this is going to continue to go on, but do you think that, I hate using this phrase, but the Trump transition team, as well as the president-elect himself, seems to be doubling down on this, as opposed to. Although there has been even some backtracking, I guess.
I think he backtracked today about
the intelligence. So, what do you make out of the?
Well, he said. Well, I agree with what Rosemary was just implying, stating. Nothing means anything to this guy. So if he gets caught, right? If he gets caught being dumb, he says, no, and he did say this, I love intelligence people.
Right.
I mean, that's what he says.
Yep.
And everybody says, oh, okay, when we get that. Is that because the American people can project themselves into not knowing a lot and therefore don't want to get caught themselves when they ask what the last book they read was? Or that kind of thing, and saying, okay, he said it. He said, no, I love intelligence people. That's enough. Goodbye.
Well, and it's a great point, because it was something I think we talked about yesterday, where you say, let's take the New York Times, for example. You have this running feud with the New York Times. You talk to them. They're losing. The loser, New York Times, blah, blah, blah. You tweet that every week. Then you have a meeting with the New York Times. They're great. They're a gold standard, blah, blah, blah.
Exactly.
And so today he meets with intelligence officials. We can only assume that it's going to be a positive meeting when he walks out, right?
And by the way, it always just changes. In other words, you're absolutely right, Joe. Oh, I love the New York Times. It's the gold standard. But that doesn't stop him from 2 days later saying something nasty about the New York Times.
Right.
He changes on a dime.
I think it is in his interest, and you will see him say positive things in order to just stop it right there. Because if it continued, if there's more investigation, then we get closer and closer to what was his actual involvement or the involvement of his closest lieutenants in this whole arrangement with the Russians. We still don't have that.
Many more topics to discuss. We have a break, and we're seconds away, so we'll do that, and we'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. And it's cold outside, but it's very cozy in here, and hopefully you are as well. We have Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Barbara Smith, and we're taking your letters. And we have some letters here.
Joe, can I read one that I think is really extraordinary?
Absolutely.
From Martin, who writes to us every once in a while. I don't always agree. He doesn't always agree with me. But good morning, panel. Russian interference in our elections through hacking, fake news, etc., is only a threat to our democracy to the extent that the electorate allows itself to be influenced by it. Concerning, of course. But the real threats to American democracy are homegrown, like gerrymandering, correct, this is Alan speaking, massive voter disenfranchisement, greedy special interests, and 50% voter participation. Hillary didn't need many more votes in the Midwest to win the Electoral College. Russian hacking makes for a captivating story, but it's a shame that these domestic issues don't get more mainstream attention because their cumulative effect is undeniable. Well, Martin, I got to tell you, and there is nothing you named today that we haven't discussed in some great, to some great extent. Oh, okay, over to you, Joe.
Okay, we go to Peter, who says, it used to be said that there was no daylight between Democrats and Republicans when it came to U.S. security, and that political bickering stopped at the ocean's edge. Now we will have security that stops at the edge of the president's ego. We got this from Wayne, who says, after seeing It's a Wonderful Life a couple weeks ago, I find it an interesting parallel that what could have been Pottersville is similar to what is happening with Trump and what could become Trumpocracy, trumping democracy. Okay, not so wonderful life. As Trump, Dan writes, for some unknown reason, can't release his tax returns, what is the status of his audit? Is it known? Why hasn't it been completed? Surely they can put another man on the job. Finishing it would at least force Trump to come up with a new excuse as to why he hasn't released his returns. Well, it's the they have the keys to the kingdom now, right?
As you know, it's never even been confirmed that there was an audit. There's the IRS does not give out that information. We don't even know that that whole excuse of, oh, wait till the audit's over, was real to begin with.
And that there would have been no reason for them.
Well, even if it was, it's true,
yes.
There's nothing that precludes you from giving out your returns when they're under audit. It's all bogus.
John writes, at what point should we be concerned about the election interference within this country by our own media? New York Times illegal use of Trump's tax forms, Russian hacking.
Not illegal. Wrong. Not illegal. First, we don't know who gave it. If, for example, it was submitted by Marla Maples, that would be completely possible. Her name is on it. It's her tax return. You can give your taxes to
whoever you want. Or the accountant,
right? Right. Second, the Supreme Court has ruled that if you do not yourself illegally obtain the material or encourage someone else to illegally obtain it, you may use the material. It's the same argument that the right uses when they say, oh, it doesn't matter if the Russians did the hacking. It's what's in the emails that is material. Both are right. Yes.
John makes the point and goes on and says the CNN feeding debate questions to one candidate, false stories like the Washington Post Russian hacking of a Vermont utility, moderators asking DNC for Trump questions. Where's the moral outrage on the panel? I think the public has become educated about what's going on.
That's just so biased. I mean, I don't even know where to begin. First of all, the erroneous story by the Washington Post has been vigorously investigated by the rest of the press, Intercept, and it came long after the election. And there was one question given by Donna Brazile to Hillary Clinton. It was, first of all, a completely obvious question. Why she had to be leaked that and couldn't figure out herself she'd be asked about it, I don't know. But that being said, CNN is totally wrong to have hired Donna Brazile, a Democratic operative, to serve two masters. She didn't. She served her political master, and it's a bad idea that has been completely talked about here, and there is outrage about it. So the letter is just wrong on many, many aspects. It's just completely anti-press.
Donna Brazile did have a relationship with CNN before
she did
this campaign, though, right?
She did, but she was working as both
at the time, of the
DNC.
That's the point at which she should have
taken
a leave or whatever.
Is it really on her? I think it's CNN's problem. I boycotted them because they did the same with Corey Lewandowski.
Right.
He served Trump as his master, so he did not serve CNN well, and I think Donna Brazile did the same thing.
Let's see. Linda writes, in a conversation with my financial advisor prior to the election, she mentioned that there is not a bank in the U.S. that will lend Trump money. All of his financing comes from the Russians. That, admittedly, is hearsay. But
the Germans, too.
I'm assuming she has some knowledge on the matter. If even remotely true, that means the Russians own him lock, stock, and barrel. And that has been reported quite a bit as to what his financial aims.
It continues to be investigated.
Well, it could be. But just to play it absolutely fair here, folks, we really can't say that is just hearsay. You know, because otherwise we'd be reading everything that anybody ever thought up and say, well, you know, that's just hearsay. We've really got to deal with established fact pattern, don't we?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Jim writes, dear panel, do you think that Putin has achieved his goal of causing distrust of our institutions and charming a world-class buffoon? Could it really be that easy? All right, we'll leave that to be a rhetorical question, and I'll move on to other topics then. Let's go to what is happening. Go ahead, Alan.
I just wanted to give you one more kudo, Joe. Hey, all, excellent interview, excellent panel. By the way, you did mention Malcolm Nance's name. Yeah, we did. We got a letter saying we hadn't mentioned his name, or we mentioned it while the water was on, and you only mentioned it once. People will always find something to get down on you with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I know.
Yeah.
So we were talking about this during the break, and it is a main part of this Russian story, which is a Washington Post exclusive this morning. that senior officials in the Russian government celebrated Donald Trump's victory over Hillary Clinton as a geopolitical win for Moscow, according to U.S. officials who said that the American intelligence agencies intercepted communications in the aftermath of the election in which Russian officials congratulated themselves on the outcome. The ebullient reaction among high-ranking Russian officials, including some who U.S. officials believe had knowledge of the country's cyber campaign to interfere in the U.S. election, contributed to the U.S. intelligence community's assessment that Moscow's efforts were aimed, at least in part, at helping Trump win the White House. Other key pieces of information gathered by U.S. spy agencies include the identification of quote-unquote actors involved in delivering stolen Democratic emails to the WikiLeaks website and disparities in the levels of effort Russian intelligence entities devoted to penetrating and exploiting sensitive information stored on Democratic and Republican campaign networks. So when you look at the intercepts and what we, this is a big deal.
Yeah. It's not conclusive because they might just have been really, really happy. But
because someone just had a baby or whatever.
Yeah. It was like, you know, they were in a celebratory mood.
Right,
I mean,
right.
It is not completely conclusive, but a body of evidence is being compiled, and this certainly plays into it.
And let's remember that one and one makes two. And who we're and who we're dealing with here? We are dealing with a dictator, a guy who has his enemies jailed, a guy who has all kinds of nefarious stuff associated with him as a former KGB colonel, so that when they celebrate, you don't get the idea that they're celebrating sort of happenstance. They've got something in mind.
John McCain seem ticked off yesterday. What did you think of his actions?
I think we ought to make a statue to him and put it out somewhere. Because I'll tell you what he's got. He may not always be right, and he certainly isn't, but he has real integrity. This is a guy who was in a bamboo cage, right, for all those months, who would not leave because they were willing to let the admiral's son go, but he insisted that the others be allowed to leave too, and he stayed in the cage. And then along comes Trump and says, you know, I don't honor him because he was caught. Oh, really? Do you think that's something that anybody would ever forget?
Well, right, and I mean, he certainly has. Obviously, his service and his.
Okay, he did appoint Sarah Palin. There is a blot on his.
There, there is a blot on his record.
Oh, there's more than one. Actually.
Yeah, there are a couple. There are a couple. But
and
I said that.
And but that's right.
His new role is, because obviously he is no friend of Trump.
No.
And in this case, he steered this committee. To the conversation to Julian Assange and saying, I believe he is the one who's responsible for publishing the names of individuals who work for us, who put us in direct danger. Do you think there's any credibility we should attach to this individual? Mr. McCain asked James Clapper. Not in my view, Clapper replied. Mr. McCain turned to Admiral Michael Rogers, a leader of the National Security Agency and U.S. Cyber Command. I would second those comments, Rogers said. Asked by Mr. McCain whether hacking the American elections would be an attack on the United States, Mr. Clapper demurred. Whether that constitutes an act of war is a very heavy call that I don't think the intelligence community should make, but he called it a matter of great gravity.
Yep.
And this is what John McCain was hammering at and hoping that he said after the hearing that he hoped that this made an impact on the president-elect of knowing that the importance of what he was saying and what he was saying by not agreeing with the intelligence.
So if he's acting the fool like this prior to the inauguration, what is in store for post-inauguration?
Yeah.
It's just so out there.
I think that McCain must be tremendously satisfied by this. I think this is why he swallowed his pride and supported in that lukewarm way he did Trump during the campaign, so that he could get in here and actually counter him in the Senate. And so we're seeing how opposition arises. He's on the Republican side, so his opposition is very, very meaningful and effective because he actually, like, knows what he's talking about.
Well, Rosemary, I want to agree with you, but there is something else that we at least should give some notice to. I think he's showing tremendous integrity right now. But he was running again. And, you know, nobody really knew what the Trump effect was going to be in Arizona. And so he, you know, he lukewarm, as you say, endorsed Trump. But if we're going to get into the motivation stuff, that's a possible motivation, isn't it?
Yeah, I forgive me for sounding disrespectful, but you have, Alan, somewhat of an inconsistent theory about politicians' motivations. Like, everything that Cuomo does, for example, is negative and for just personal gain, and not John McCain.
Wait a second. That's what I just said.
You think he's doing it only because he wanted to get back in?
I didn't say that. I said it's something we had to consider, the fact mm-hmm. that he was running for senator and that he needed the help. And he thought he might need the help. I don't know that he did, but he thought he might need the help. I still think he's a hero.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll go to more letters and more topics. We welcome yours, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable panel. Just made it sound like I was about to name the murderer there. All right. Welcome back to the roundtable panel. Very, very startling, yes. We have letters. Let me get to some of those. Brian writes, thank you, Barbara, for calling a spade, or in this case, an idiot, an idiot. Good morning, says Linda, because of the way that Trump leapfrogs from one tweet to the next, it is of the utmost importance to have press conferences. I asked this question yesterday, and I still don't know really the case. Do we have a confirmed date of when he's going to have a press conference?
Not a confirmed date.
Not a confirmed date. Okay.
No. And can I just interrupt here?
Absolutely.
Remember last week he was saying that he knew some things about the hacking situation
that would come out Tuesday or Wednesday.
Yeah.
It is now
and
Friday.
Did we hear anything? No.
I thought, though, Barbara, that it was that Julian Assange was denying it. I thought that was the big revelation. Kellyanne called that a bombshell.
But he didn't say anything. He didn't tell. That was not him conveying that information, was it?
I took Kellyanne saying, this is a bombshell. This changes everything. I took it as that was the big thing he was referring
but he,
to.
But he made a promise. He made
You're
a
right.
statement that he was going to tell all of us, you know nothings, something that he knew next week.
Right.
And it never happened. I just wanted to point that out.
Yes.
Joe, we heard from Nick, who said, John McCain, I just heard Alan say McCain has integrity. Please consider this. McCain had integrity, which he threw away when he gave us Sarah Palin in 2008. That was one of the most cynical moves in our modern political history. It's tempting to warm to McCain these days, but let's not forget what happened in 2008. Do you guys know about the product Murine? You know what that's for?
Yes, yeah, it's an old-fashioned.
It cleans the wax out of your ears. We said that.
Eyes.
We very specifically said that. And I specifically said, and even though I think he has integrity, I don't agree with him, and I haven't agreed with him on a lot of things. So why do people make stuff up?
I don't know. Also, I mean, again, I'm not going to defend this and go back to history, but we didn't know the level of nuttiness until she was chosen, right? I mean, we look back on it, and it's a bad decision. But at the time, we didn't know how crazy she was going to become, right?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I don't.
Yes.
There are people now who have been nominated or have been elected now that, you know, we knew the crazy. I don't think we knew the crazy when she was chosen.
Right. She was the first one that made. Crazy candidates are fun. Let's have one run for president.
But they didn't win.
But you know what's interesting? As long as we're on the topic,
yes,
he has not chosen her. Although there was great talk, internal talk, that somehow he was going to find something for her to do in the cabinet.
Well, also, and not to go back, and I'm not on a campaign to I can't think of words today.
Is it bash?
No, to defend, defend John McCain.
The opposite.
But there have been some great articles and some great, and even a TV movie about how John McCain moved away from, within the campaign, moved away from Sarah Palin very quickly. And there was some. There was some grave reserve, and I think after like the first interview, I think maybe the Katie Couric mm-hmm. interview, where he just said, "Okay, now what can we do?" Because he realized that he had made a grave error. Mm-hmm.
He paid for it.
So. Yeah.
And by the way, we heard from Matt. What does L period A period A C period mean? What does that mean? Are you a licensed accountant?
I don't know, Alan. I have to look that up. LAC?
L capital L dot. Capital A, small c, dot. I'm thinking maybe licensed accountant or something like that. So Matthew says, I don't always agree with our panel with the panelists, but I wanted to express my appreciation that our, in capital letters, community has WAMC to keep us informed and encourage civil dialogue. Unity is strength and knowledge is power in this ludicrous political atmosphere.
I have it coming up as the Louisville Athletic Club, but I'm sure that's not the context of which it was taken. But anyway.
Maybe.
It could be. True. Tim writes, certainly the Russian hacking and the possible manipulation of our election process are very serious threats to our democracy. But I think it is only fair to acknowledge that this whole election cycle was compromised, especially the well-documented manipulation of the whole nominating process by the DNC.
That's an old argument. I don't want to make it anymore.
I have nothing to say about that.
Okay.
Either.
There you go.
Meredith says, the big issue here is not the Russian hacking. The fact that they celebrated his victory is unsurprising. They've always used illegal tactics. They always will. Oh. And the fact that they wanted him to win over Clinton was obvious. The real issue is Trump's reaction to it. The fact that he is siding with Russia and WikiLeaks over his own intelligence officers is frightening. Well, I think there's some
truth in that, but if he colluded to make it happen, then we got a much bigger problem.
As I have said all along, the day that that happens, and we got a letter this morning that was interesting, said, could he be impeached before January 20th?
No.
No,
you can't.
I don't think you can do it before he takes office, and I don't think it's going to be so easy to do. The only way this guy is going to get impeached, in my view, is when the members of the House of Representatives, and we're talking about the Republican members in Maine, hear from so many constituencies, like they did the other day, constituents, about their changing their rules to their favor. It's only when that happens that you will get an impeachment. It will not happen before that.
And meanwhile, those House Republicans are happily on their way with their own agenda. Planned Parenthood is on the chopping block today, and of course Obamacare as well. So I think they're going to not want to deal with an impeachment. They hope to do a whole lot under this Trump administration.
No, but if it's me or he, it'll be he, not me. I'm talking in their bodies. In other words, if it means their continued election, you look, Rosemary, you were around during Watergate, right?
Yeah.
And you remember? I mean, you remember that the inflammation of the American public. They elected Nixon, by the way, a second time, even though we knew about it. But then the demand was incredible, and Ford lost because he pardoned Nixon.
Alan, there were Republicans of real integrity at
there
that
were.
Time.
There were.
And I am not seeing them in Congress right now.
Well, do you think John McCain is not exemplary of exactly what you're talking about?
He's
right
not
now?
In Congress. He's in the Senate.
Well, Congress, by the way, just for our political science wonks, Congress is both houses of the
impeachment,
legislature.
Impeachment, however, is not. Impeachment is in the House.
That is right.
So
that's
my statement. I am unaware of people of integrity on the Republican side in the House that would make a difference in an impeachment proceeding.
And my answer is you're going to find it when the constituents rise up, pick up the telephone, swamp the telephones and say, this is not right that we're helping the Russians. One last thing.
I hope you're right, Alan, but that is not the historical model. After the revelations in the press about Watergate, the American people elected Richard Nixon by the largest procedure.
I just said so. I just said so.
But it was people of courage in the House of Representatives who brought about impeachment.
Without question.
I do want to talk about being overloaded. We have a spate of emails coming in. LAC is licensed acupuncturist.
Oh, wow.
I should have known that.
Yes, licensed acupuncturist, which for some reason Google did not help me with. So, but thank you. But listeners are much smarter than Google.
Yes,
much smarter than Google.
Did you ever ask Google how to get somewhere and find out that there was an easier way?
Well, yes, and I've also asked Google and found out that there is an easier way on my own, and suddenly found myself going through New Jersey to get to Hudson. But yes. All right. So we're going to take a break. When we go back, when we come back, we'll get to some more letters. We'll get to some more topics. We'll talk about other cool stuff. And but first, we're going to get news from Ray Graff.
Ray.
Yes,
Ray.
Giving me the sign that he's ready. You're listening.
That's the sign?
That is the sign. I don't know. It was the same guy who gave it to me on the highway. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion. It is Friday, the 6th of January, and very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok is here. We also have Rosemary Armeo and Barbara Smith, and we welcome your letters. Panel.
Hey, Joe, just one thing, about 20 people have written now asking who the guy was that your fabulous interview was with yesterday. So could we tell him one more time?
Sure. It was Malcolm Nance, who is a counter-terrorism intelligence expert, has been in the intelligence community for decades, is a contributor to MSNBC and NBC, and the author of several books. His new book is on hacking the election, and he has another book out about ISIS, and it's on our website. The interview I did yesterday is on our website. The interview that Alan did regarding the ISIS book is also on the website, so you can check that out.
And if you
but
don't
it's
mind,
Malcolm Nance, yes.
Sorry. And if you don't mind my saying, he is African American.
Yes.
And I think that's important because it's radio, and I think people can Google him and see who he is. But the thing is, he is at the very top of his field. His work is obviously in service, in deep service to the United States. So I like, the fact that he is as distinguished and expert as he is, and he's also smashing stereotypes.
Yeah. You know, it's very interesting that you say that. I've been thinking about that a lot, Barbara, lately, and that is that we don't say, the top spy who is African-American in the New York Times, right? But inevitably, there is a picture. And I think that's sort of the way that the word goes out. Am I wrong about that?
Well, the thing is, I think that I've always been fascinated at how people who are not people of color handle their description of or their marking of racial identity in conversation, in writing, whatever. The fact that his picture is, that's why I said people should Google him, because, his picture, pops right up. And as I said, I knew exactly who he was as soon as I looked at it, because I've seen him so often, on, news shows and on TV as
well,
an expert.
Should the media identify somebody
if it's relevant to the story? I mean, the thing is, if he's being cited for his expertise about intelligence, I don't think there's any need to say that he's African-American in a news story. The reason I'm letting our listeners know is because this is not a news story. This is a radio show.
Right.
And I'm black, and I'm proud of him.
Well, you but I've had this conversation with you, Barbara, where I've said that you've been on and people have said, why don't you have a person of color on the panel? And I said, well, we did. We had Barbara on, and they said, oh, I didn't know she was black. And then we were talking about, well, then, it doesn't seem proper to identify that Rosemary is white, that you're black, that I'm white. You know what I mean?
Well, the thing is, I have self-identified many times on this show.
Of course you have.
But that doesn't, I mean, not everybody listens to every show by any means.
Here's the thing. The rule in journalism is you don't make a racial identification unless it's relevant to the story. But Barbara, as you have increasingly pointed out to us, that is becoming relevant. In a Trump administration, it is relevant now.
Mm. Yeah. What she said.
It's a great point. A great point.
A point that Ray Graff has made about me many times is that I'm short.
And there's that. Okay.
That does explain something.
We got a letter. We got a letter from Bunny Donahue. And oh, I love that.
Any relation?
No. Not that I'm aware of, but I love it. If Bunny is related to me, I want to know it because I've never seen that name on the family tree. But damn it, I want to. Bunny Donahue writes in and says, last night on Rachel Maddow, it was announced that Trump is giving a press conference on January 11th, the same day as all of his cabinet appointments are being processed for approval. Let's see if Trump really does it. We'll check on that and see if that's still going to happen. Also, David says it is possible that much of what is happening is being orchestrated by BP-elect Pence and the Republicans to eventually impeach Trump or force him to retire. That would allow the Republicans to have an ideologue as their leader. Pence already appears to be the man behind the throne.
Well, I think that's right. I don't know that there's this. I don't think that there's necessarily a conspiracy to do that. But I do think he represents the conservative right of the Republican Party, and that there are many people in that party who would not be unhappy to see Pence as the president of the United States.
Do you think there would be many people in the Democratic Party who would be happier to see Pence president than Donald Trump?
I just don't know about that. I've been thinking about that a lot. We've been hearing from a lot of listeners who've been writing us about that, saying we would be worse off Pence than Trump.
I've always felt that we would be because he's so ideological, and he also knows the system and the process. He will get done what he and his ilk wish to get done without glitches, without drama. It'll just get done.
Yeah, well, that's one side of it, all right. No question about that. That is one side of that argument. On the other hand, let's just say that there have been many people who have made allegations. They are unproven. They're untested. That Trump is has psychological issues. And if that's true, do you really want that guy with his hand on the button, as Hillary said during the campaign?
And just to get back to Pence, to characterize the kind of individual he is, in Indiana, he approved of a law, or perhaps even was instrumental in getting such a law passed, that changed the form, or I don't know if it changed the form for getting a marriage license in Indiana. What he got passed. If you say anything on that application for a marriage license that's not true, it's prosecutable. You can be fined and or jailed. So if you're filling out an application for a marriage license and anything can be proven on the license application to be untrue, you can be arrested, fined, and jailed.
Give us
and
an example.
The purpose is you only have the choice of when you check gender for the two people getting married, it's only male and female. So if two women are applying for the license, cross out male and put female, they have made an untruth or written an untruth on that application and are subject to arrest, prosecution, and prison. That's who Pence is.
Or as they say, when you pull off the thing from the mattress, you know, remember the mattress?
Oh, yeah,
thing?
Or your pillow, right, yeah.
You can be prosecuted to the full extent of the law.
No, but this is serious. This is about homophobia, and it is
absolutely
Indiana law.
Yeah.
All right, let's go on to some other subjects. And
by the way, we've gotten 11 letters talking about the fact that L.AC is a licensed acupuncturist. It's always fascinating, isn't it, Joe, what we get mail about?
Yes.
So there'll be an obscure point made, and then everybody writes.
They're smart listeners. They want to share that with us, and we thank them very much.
How many do we get about murine used to clear out earwax?
None.
Ha.
Huh. None.
Because it's not for ears,
it's eyes.
Oh, that's what's for the ears?
Debrox.
No, There's another one for your
there
ear.
May be.
No, actually, I think visine is for the eye. I think yes, Alan's right. It's murine for your ear.
Oh, thank
okay,
you.
So thank we can you, Google Joe. That.
Okay, now we'll get the letters.
Oh, thank you, Joe.
Murine ear wax removal system.
God, you are so good with that machine, Joe. That is fantastic.
Oh, it's got the little blue thing. I remember that, Alan. And on, the little blue thing.
And on my Google list, murine eye drops.
Yeah, well, maybe they make both. They make both.
I have them at home, yeah.
So what do you put in your ear?
Murine.
You put in nothing.
But your elbow.
Exactly, Joe.
Yes, that's right. I was told that when I once had a piece of a TV guide that had to be removed from my ear canal as a very young child. The only thing I should ever put into my ear is my elbow.
Right. Okay, and speaking of weighty issues of the day.
Okay, sorry, Rosemary.
Yes.
Okay, we'll get back. Sure, take away the fun.
That wasn't a shot, was it, Rosemary?
Dave Gustina is putting his face at the door saying, what the?
Critics. All right. By the way, Bunny wrote in and said, Dear Joe, not a direct relation. Only back in the old country were Klan members. So that's good.
CLN.
CLN. Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Barbara. Yeah. All right. Do we want to talk? You know, we talked about the story yesterday. It's very troubling. But I do want to talk about it a little bit more, and that is the story out of Chicago regarding the viral Facebook video. There were arrests made in this, and the video, which I believe is did you say it was still up?
I don't know if it's up now, but it was up for much of yesterday.
Extraordinary sight, unbelievable.
Well, I'm looking at the Washington Post website, and there's a link for play video right on it.
Mm-hmm. So
they downloaded it, though.
Right? Yeah, they probably they have a copy.
Oh, you're
I
saying?
I don't know
whether
asking, it was still,
it still
on the site.
Yeah,
and
it's
I don't
whether
know.
A live link or not.
The reaction to a viral Facebook video of a hate crime tells us something about post-election America. This is an article from the Los Angeles Times. It was a gruesome incident by any measure. A group of Chicago teens bound and attacked a mentally disabled teen and broadcast the violence on Facebook for the public to see. But then six words the black attackers said as they assaulted their white victim changed the nature of things, sending what would normally be a local crime investigation in one of the country's most violence-plagued cities into the national fray over a combustible mix of race, social media, and the presidential election. We did say this yesterday, but they throughout the video, they were saying F Donald Trump and F white people. Police charged four teens on Thursday with kidnapping, battery, and unlawful restraint after investigating the Facebook Live video that showed them attacking and taunting the mentally disabled 18-year-old, punching him while yelling obscenities against the boy's race and against Donald Trump. Against the boy's race and Trump.
What do you think, Barbara?
It's very hard for me to talk about this. I would prefer. Did you have anything else you were going to say?
Well, I was going to say the 30-minute video put up on Tuesday and later removed has spread widely online. It shows the victim sitting in a corner with his wrist bound and mouth taped shut as his attackers laugh at him. At one point, they attempt to cut off a patch of his hair as his scalp bleeds. Rosemary, you said you had some you concerned about this story.
Yeah, I mean, please, for those of you thinking to write me, I do not condone beating. I don't understand what's happening with the story. That video, is it real? Why was it up on Facebook for so long? Normally, videos showing any kind of sex or violence are taken down immediately.
This is torture.
Yeah, it was torture. And there is apparently some connection between the young man who's being beaten and the people doing the beating.
What does that mean?
They went to the same school. There's some.
So does that excuse it?
No, it just raises doubts in my mind about what's really going on. Was this something that they staged to make a video out of? I don't think we have all the answers yet. The police thought about making a charge of kidnapping, and they've dialed that back. I don't know. I just have a funny feeling about the story.
In an interview with a Chicago television station, President Obama called the attack despicable, but said he didn't believe there had been an increase in racial animosity in the country, just a greater awareness of it because of cell phones and the internet, which we were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So now I'll just say I'm just really distraught at the thought of someone being treated that way. The fact that it was four black teenagers, of course, drives the, you know, the stake even, you know, closer
deeper
to the heart, because when you are a part of a group that is stigmatized and stereotyped, anything that one member of our group does is attributed to all of us. So there's that, you know, kind of group mentality of like, oh, just don't let it be a black guy. Please don't let it be a black guy. And here, you know, we have evidence that there are four black kids. And they're, you know, that doesn't mean that we live with this, you know, and Chicago is so violent. And that's right. Usually black on black violence that's happening there. But it's just very upsetting and very sad. And I hope that people don't, I don't assume our listeners would. But I just hope that people don't fall into the stereotypes.
I do want to—I'm sorry to interrupt—but mm-hmm, I do want to mention that you know, the president, of course, said that he doesn't see these incidents increasing, just that our awareness has increased. Richard Cohen, who's president of the Southern Poverty Law Center, said yesterday, "I would say the level of hate in our country, and certainly after the election, has gone up over the last decade because we are becoming more polarized. The crime is shocking, and I'm glad the authorities have moved so quickly." Among the nearly 1,000 hate-related incidents in the Montgomery, Alabama-based organization has tracked since the presidential election, many of which invoked Trump's name and targeted Muslims, blacks, Hispanics, and immigrants. Cohen said the organization also found 26 reports of incidents targeted against Trump supporters. So, again, that level of hate, both sides, increasing, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center. Anybody else want in on that before
but we... Let's make sure we... look at the proportions.
Yeah,
1,000 hate crimes, 26 of which were aimed at Trump reporters.
Supporters.
Trump supporters. Mm. So that's quite disproportionate, it seems to me.
Well, you know, we are, to use Ms. Donahue's point from before about the Klan, C-L-A-N, the Donahue Klan, we are a nation of sort of tribes in many ways. I'll never forget when the Son of Sam was caught, Berkowitz, and my mother saw the paper and got very upset that he had a Jewish name.
Mm-hmm.
And then her relief when she found out he was adopted. Well, this whole thing gets to be crazy after a while about, you know, racial identity and saying, well, I'm glad he wasn't Jewish, I'm glad he wasn't black, I'm glad he wasn't Irish. You know, that's the way it is in this country.
But there's certain groups when they commit crimes, nobody is concerned about, I don't know what Dylan Roof's exact ethnicity and heritage is, but nobody's concerned about, let's just say, Southern Christian white people.
I don't agree with that. I think that's not right. I mean, I certainly thought that it identified a group. No question in my mind.
But the thing is, like, is a whole group painted with that brush of that they're all, you know, psychotic, you know, and racist murderers. It doesn't swing both ways.
All right, so we go to another topic, and well, we did get this letter, which I did not read when we were going through the last round of letters. Laura says, I heard on MSNBC last night that the confirmation hearings for multiple appointees are scheduled for the same time, and that Trump's press conference is probably scheduled for the same time, so the press coverage will be divided and diluted. Personally, I'll believe in the press conference when I see it. How many similar events have been canceled or postponed? P.S. Any hints on how to best contact our representatives to register our protest? Well, we've talked a lot about that, but there are a number of sources online if you just go to contact your representatives that will help you in that regard.
And
you mentioned one yesterday.
It takes patience. We spent a half an hour trying to get to Paul Ryan's office last night, and this was after hours, and it was just busy, solidly busy. So.
One wonders whether they pick whether they leave the phone off.
Yes,
the hook.
I did wonder that, and there's no way to tell.
Has it been? I know recently, not just on this program, but on all programs I've seen, the importance of the phone call as opposed to an email.
Right.
And why is that?
Because there's a delay with the email that's collected. Just like letters come in here and then they're printed out in the other office and carried in here. There's a delay, and the phone call, it's immediate, it's recorded, and the numbers rack up right away.
So they know know instantly. Because you would think it would be the same with the email. I mean, like right now, I know how many emails we got just from the last 10 minutes. You know what I mean?
So some of it, too, is probably just old-fashioned.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that.
They need a separate server.
Yeah.
There's an organization that I found out that perhaps you already know about, but I just found out about it this week, which is called Indivisible. Have people heard about
that? Oh, yeah, the Indivisible Guide we talked about.
Right.
Libby brought that up,
right.
Yes. And there were some questions about it from listeners, and we've sent out messages to them about that.
It's called indivisibleguide.com. It's IndivisibleGuide, Indivisible Guide.
With no space between indivisible and guide.
That's right. OneWord.com, and we'll help in the, I believe it's from former congressional staffers,
yes.
Which helps you get the sort of inside track on how to get a hold of your
the
representative.
Best way. The best way, yes.
And there is a guide there for you and to put in your zip code and to work it through.
Joe, could I just read a letter from David real quickly?
Absolutely.
Good morning. Referring to Trump as an idiot does a disservice to the conversation. Repeatedly calling him an idiot is dismissive of his abilities and acts to disrupt productive conversation. He has been one step ahead of the citizenry and the media for the last year. He is a terrible human being, but not a dummy. By the way, I love the show, Daily Listener, and that's from David. Interesting letter.
I think it's an interesting letter, although I think, you know, if you're going to call other people losers and morons and
let me like to take the con on that one, Joe.
Two wrongs don't make a right?
Exactly.
I agree.
I think I've said that before.
Yeah, well.
I know we're getting close to the end of our time. I just wanted to make sure that listeners know that here in Albany on January 21st, there will be a day of actions under the title of Inaugurate Resistance. And they will take place at 155 Washington Avenue, which is SEIU 1199 office building, and they will be starting at 12 o'clock. There will be workshops at that time in the afternoon, and then at 4 there will be a march and rally.
Is that in relationship to the Women's March?
It's kind of like, because we are assuming they're people, it's not all the topics that will be discussed will not focus only on women's issues. All the women's issues are all issues.
But obviously that'll be the same day as the Women's March.
Yes, for people who can't get to any of those other places.
And you know why? Because the TU did a terrific story this morning on all the buses in the Northeast are spoken for, every one of them. Every one of them. And by the way, I love the term, Barbara, resistance, because, you know, maybe
we have 10 seconds, Alan.
Okay, maybe that's what we got to.
Okay. thank you. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll be back with the panel, and we'll be back with the show right after this.